Hey everyone, welcome back for another deep dive. We're always talking about the importance of good leadership in the church, but have you ever wondered what that really looks like, practically speaking?
Right. It can be kind of a fuzzy concept.
Totally. And today we're going to get some clarity because we're diving into a lecture by Dr. Robert Yarbrough. He's like the expert on the pastoral epistles. And get this, he compares choosing church leaders to hiring practices you'd find in business.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting analogy. I wouldn't have thought of
I
that.
know, right? And it makes you think, doesn't it? If we're trying to build churches that thrive, we got to be smart about who we're putting in leadership positions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where Dr. Yarbrough starts. He points out that churches rarely rise above the level of their leaders. It's a kind of a sobering thought when you think about it.
It is for sure.
Okay.
So where does he go from there?
Well, he dives into 1 Timothy 3, where the Apostle Paul lays out some guidelines for choosing overseers and deacons.
Okay, so we're talking pastors and deacons here.
Right. Exactly. And what's fascinating is that these aren't just like random rules pulled out of thin air. They're rooted in a deep understanding of human nature and what it takes to lead well.
I'm starting to see why you're so excited about this lecture. So let's talk specifics. What kind of qualities does Paul highlight?
Well, he starts with the idea that an overseer should be above reproach.
Above reproach.
Yeah.
Okay, so that makes sense. Like they should have a good reputation and not be involved in any shady business, right?
Right. But Dr. Yarbrough takes it a step further than just avoiding obviously bad behavior. He talks about what he calls a sanctified imagination.
A sanctified imagination. Now that sounds pretty deep.
It is. He's basically saying that leaders need to think carefully about how their actions will be perceived by others, even if their intentions are pure.
Oh, I see. So, like, even if a leader isn't actually doing anything wrong, if their actions could be misinterpreted or cause someone to stumble, they need to be aware of that.
Exactly. It's about being sensitive to how others might perceive things and guarding against even the appearance of impropriety.
That makes total sense, especially when you consider that leaders are often held to a higher standard.
Absolutely. People are watching them, looking to them as examples.
Okay, so above reproach isn't just about following rules, it's about cultivating a mindset of carefulness and awareness.
And humility, too. I think that's a big part of it.
Humility. Yeah, I can see that. Now, another quality that often sparks debate is the instruction for an overseer to be faithful to his wife. Some people take that to mean no divorce under any circumstances.
Right, that's a common interpretation. But Dr. Yarbrough offers a more nuanced perspective. He emphasizes that the emphasis is on faithfulness itself, not a rigid rule against divorce.
So it's more about the character of the person than their marital status.
Exactly. And when you consider the historical context, it makes even more sense.
Oh, how so?
Well, divorce was much more common and casual back then, especially for men. So by emphasizing faithfulness, Paul was setting a radically different standard for Christian leaders.
It's like he's saying, this is what a covenant relationship looks like. This is how a man who represents Christ treats his wife.
Exactly. And that level of commitment is essential for building trust and stability within a church community.
It's about modeling a healthy marriage that reflects Christ's love for the church.
Absolutely. So we've got above reproach and faithful to his wife. What's next?
Well, in the lecture notes, Dr. Yarbrough has a bunch of other qualities listed. Let's see, temperate, respectable, hospitable, able to teach.
It sounds like a pretty demanding job description.
It does, right? But I'm guessing these aren't just random personality traits that Paul threw in there.
You're right. He has a reason for including each one. For example, he talks about how these qualities create a welcoming atmosphere within the church.
Oh, that's interesting. Tell me more about that.
Well, he tells this funny story about a pastor who was known for his terrible coffee. People would actually avoid going to his house because the coffee was so bad.
Oh, no. That's hilarious, but also kind of sad.
Right? It's a lighthearted example, but it illustrates a bigger point. Leaders need to create a space where people feel comfortable and welcomed. If people are afraid to approach their pastor or feel judged, it's going to hinder their spiritual growth.
So it's about more than just being nice. It's about cultivating an environment of warmth and acceptance.
Exactly. It's about extending hospitality to the church community, just like you would to guests in your own home.
I like that. Now, another one that stood out to me was the emphasis on being able to teach.
Ah, yes. This is a big one. Dr. Yarbrough connects teaching ability to the importance of being a lifelong learner.
So a good teacher isn't just someone who has all the answers. They're constantly seeking deeper understanding and wrestling with tough questions.
Exactly. And they're able to communicate those ideas effectively in a way that's engaging and relevant.
It's not about being a know-it-all. It's about being a learn-it-all.
I love that. And it makes me think about something you mentioned earlier about leaders being under a microscope. If you're going to be teaching and guiding others, you better be walking the walk yourself.
Absolutely. And that leads us to another interesting point Dr. Yarbrough makes about observing how potential leaders interact with children.
Oh, this is a good one. He says that kids are incredibly perceptive. They can sense insincerity or a lack of genuine care.
So if someone can't connect with kids in a gentle and respectful way, it raises questions about their overall leadership style.
Exactly. How a leader interacts with children can be a subtle but powerful indicator of their character.
So we've got above reproach, faithful to his wife, hospitable, able to teach, and now good with children. I'm starting to see a pattern here.
What's that?
These qualities aren't just about following rules. They're about reflecting a certain kind of character.
You got it. A Christ-like character that permeates every aspect of a leader's life.
So we're not just looking for someone who can preach a good sermon or manage a budget. We're looking for someone who embodies the heart of Christ.
Exactly. And that's what makes this list of qualifications so timeless and relevant. It's not about checking boxes. It's about cultivating character.
Okay, so we're building a picture of what godly leadership looks like. What other insights does Dr. Yarbrough offer?
Well, he goes on to talk about the importance of a leader managing his own family well. He points out that a pastor's family life is, in a sense, a microcosm of the church itself.
Oh, wow. I like that analogy. So if there's chaos and dysfunction in the home, it's going to be tough to effectively lead a larger community.
Exactly. And that's where Dr. Yarbrough gets really practical. He talks about the importance of parenting styles that foster respect, not fear. He emphasizes the need for creating a loving and supportive environment where children can thrive.
So leading by example, starting with the family unit, makes total sense. What else is on the list?
Well, this one might surprise you. He says that an overseer should not be a recent convert.
Wait, really? Why not?
Well, I think what he's getting at is the importance of maturity and seasoning.
So it's not about excluding new believers, but recognizing that leadership requires a certain level of experience.
Exactly. Think about it this way. Would you want a brand new pilot flying your plane or a surgeon fresh out of med school operating on you?
Probably not. I'd want someone with some miles under their belt.
Exactly. And in the same way, leading a church requires wisdom and discernment that often comes with time and experience.
So a new convert, while full of zeal and passion, might not have the same level of understanding or ability to navigate complex situations.
And Dr. Yarbrough even tells this funny story to illustrate his point about a pastor who got into a fistfight with another church member.
Oh, no. Seriously.
Yeah. It just goes to show that new converts are still figuring things out.
Yeah.
They might be prone to making impulsive decisions or getting caught up in conflicts.
So taking time to grow and mature in the faith before stepping into leadership is actually a way of protecting both the individual and the church.
And it connects to another quality he emphasizes, having a good reputation with outsiders. He talks about the devil's trap of disgrace.
Oh, that's interesting. What does he mean by that?
He's saying that a leader's actions can have far-reaching consequences, not just within the church, but in the wider community.
So it's not just about following rules within the church walls. It's about living a life that reflects Christ in every sphere of life.
Exactly. Because people are watching. And if a leader's behavior outside the church contradicts their message inside the church, it can damage the church's witness.
That's a good point. It's about safeguarding the church's reputation and its mission to the world.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked a lot about overseers or pastors, but what about deacons? Where do they fit into all of this?
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Well, Dr. Yarbrough is quick to point out that the same high standards apply to both overseers and deacons. He emphasizes that both roles are crucial for a healthy church.
So it's not a hierarchy, but a partnership.
Precisely. And he highlights a key difference between the two roles. Mm-hmm. Deacons focus primarily on practical service and care, freeing up the overseers to focus on teaching, prayer, and spiritual oversight.
I love that. It's like a well-oiled machine with each part playing a vital role.
Exactly. Now, as far as specific qualities go, many of them echo the ones listed for overseers. They should be worthy of respect, sincere, not indulging in too much wine, not pursuing dishonest gain.
So again, character and integrity are paramount, regardless of the specific role.
Absolutely. And then he adds an interesting one. Deacons must keep hold of the deep truths of the faith with a clear conscience.
So they're not just handing out bulletins and organizing potlucks. They need to have a solid grasp of what Christians believe.
Exactly. It emphasizes that theological understanding and a life of obedience are essential even in practical service roles.
That makes sense. You wouldn't want someone leading a Bible study who doesn't even believe the Bible.
Right. And that ties into the importance of testing and training before appointing anyone to a position of service. Dr. Yarbrough cautions against rushing into things and emphasizes the need for careful evaluation and preparation.
It's like giving someone the keys to the church van. You want to make sure they know how to drive first.
Exactly. Speaking of preparation, we can't ignore verse 11, which talks about the qualifications of wives. Now, this verse is often misinterpreted, but Dr. Yarbrough clarifies that it's referring to the wives of both deacons and overseers.
Okay, so we're talking about the role wives play in supporting their husbands' ministries.
Yes, and he really emphasizes this. He says that a wife's faith and encouragement can be essential for perseverance, especially when things get tough.
Which they inevitably do in ministry.
Right, and he tells a moving story about the well-known Bible teacher, R. Kent Hughes, and his wife, Barbara. He talks about how her unwavering faith kept him going when he wanted to give up.
Wow, what a testament to the power of partnership. It's not just about the leader alone, it's about the people who support them.
Absolutely. He even compares a healthy marriage to an oasis for those in ministry.
I love that image. It's a place of refuge and renewal amidst the demands and pressures of leadership. That's a powerful thought. And it makes me wonder how we can practically apply these insights to our own lives.
Me too. There's a lot to unpack here, and I think it's important to keep wrestling with these ideas and asking ourselves tough questions.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today, but this is just the tip of the iceberg.
It is. There's so much more to explore and discuss.
I'm already looking forward to diving deeper into this next time.
Me too. It's going to be fascinating to see where this conversation takes us.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back soon with more insights from Dr. Yarbrough's lecture on 1 Timothy 3. Stay tuned. I mean, it kind of makes sense when you put it that way. You wouldn't want a rookie in charge of something so important.
Right. And churches are no different. They need seasoned leaders who can handle the complexities of ministry.
So it's not about age or how long someone's been a Christian. It's about maturity and wisdom.
Exactly. And Dr. Yarbrough even tells a funny story to illustrate this point about a pastor who got into a fist fight with another church member.
Whoa, hold on. A fist fight? You're kidding, right?
Nope. It's true. And the point he's making is that new converts can be a little impulsive. They haven't quite learned how to handle conflict in a godly way yet.
So taking time to grow and mature in the faith before stepping into leadership is actually a way of protecting everyone involved.
Exactly. It's about setting people up for success, not failure. And that brings us to another quality. He emphasizes having a good reputation with outsiders. He calls it the devil's trap of disgrace.
The devil's trap of disgrace. That sounds intense.
It is. He's basically saying that if a leader's actions outside the church don't match up with their words inside the church, it can really damage the church's credibility.
So it's not just about following the rule, it's about living a life that's consistent with the gospel.
Exactly. And that's why character is so crucial for Christian leaders. People are watching them, and they need to be examples of what it means to follow Christ.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about overseers or pastors, but what about deacons? What's their role in all of this?
Well, Dr. Yarbrough points out that the same high standards apply to both overseers and deacons. In fact, he says that both roles are essential for a healthy church.
So it's not like one is more important than the other. They're both vital parts of the body of Christ.
Exactly. And he highlights a key difference between the two roles. Deacons focus primarily on practical service and care, while overseers focus on teaching, prayer, and spiritual oversight.
I like that. It's like a division of labor, everyone using their gifts to serve the church in different ways.
Exactly. Now, as far as specific qualities for deacons go, many of them echo the ones listed for overseers, worthy of respect, sincere, not indulging in too much wine, not pursuing dishonest gain.
So again, character and integrity are at the top of the list.
Absolutely. And then he adds a really interesting one. Deacons must keep hold of the deep truth of the faith with a clear conscience.
That's a good one. So they're not just running errands and setting up chairs. They need to have a solid understanding of Christian doctrine.
Exactly. It emphasizes the importance of theological depth, even in practical service roles. And that ties into his point about testing and training before appointing anyone to a position of service.
So it's not just about finding someone who's willing to serve. It's about making sure they're equipped to serve well.
Right. You want to set them up for success and protect the church from potential harm.
Okay, so we've talked about qualifications for overseers and deacons. Is there anything else Dr. Yarbrough touches on?
Well, there's one more verse that often gets people talking, and that's verse 11, which talks about the wives of deacons. It can be a bit tricky to interpret.
Oh, yeah, I've heard different perspectives on that one. What's Dr. Yarbrough's take?
Well, he clarifies that it's not just referring to the wives of deacons, but also to the wives of overseers.
So it's about the role that wives play in supporting their husbands' ministries.
Exactly. And he really emphasizes the importance of that support system. He says that a wife's faith and encouragement can be essential for a man's perseverance in ministry.
Especially when things get tough, which they inevitably do.
Right. He even shares a story about the well-known Bible teacher Arkant Hughes and his wife Barbara, talking about how her unwavering faith helped him through a really difficult season.
Wow, that's powerful. It really highlights the importance of partnership in ministry.
It does. And Dr. Yarbrough even goes so far as to compare a healthy marriage to an oasis for those in ministry.
That's a beautiful image. It's like a place of refuge and renewal amidst the challenges of leadership. It makes you realize that leadership isn't just about the individual. It's about the community that surrounds and supports them.
Absolutely. It's about working together, using our different gifts and talents to build up the body of Christ.
And that brings us back to something you said earlier about churches rarely rising above the level of their leaders.
Right. It's a sobering thought. Mm. It means that the quality of our churches depends on the character and competence of our leaders.
And that raises some important questions for all of us to consider. Well, for starters, how are we choosing and supporting our leaders? Are we looking for people of character and integrity, people who are committed to following Christ and shepherding his flock?
And are we willing to hold them accountable when they fall short?
It's a two-way street. Leaders need our support and encouragement, but they also need our honesty and our willingness to speak the truth in love.
Exactly. And on a personal level, are we embodying the qualities of Christ-like leadership in our own lives? Are we serving others with humility and integrity? Are we using our gifts to build up the church?
Those are great questions. And I think they lead us to a deeper truth that Dr. Yarbrough touches on throughout his lecture.
What's that?
That ultimately leadership isn't about position or power. It's about character. It's about becoming more like Christ and reflecting his love to the world.
Absolutely. And that's a journey that all of us are called to, regardless of whether we hold a formal leadership position or not.
So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, let's keep these things in mind. Let's pray for our leaders, support them, encourage them, and challenge them to grow in godliness.
And let's also examine our own hearts and ask God to make us the kind of leaders he wants us to be.
Because the health and vitality of our churches depend on it.
It does. And so does the impact we have on the world around us.
Well said. Now, before we go, I want to remind everyone that Dr. Yarbrough's lecture is available in full in the show notes. So if you want to dive deeper into his insights, be sure to check it out.
It's definitely worth a listen. Yeah. There's so much wisdom and practical advice in there for anyone who wants to grow as a leader.
Okay, so that's it for today. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back soon with more insights from 1 Timothy 3. You know, as we're wrapping up this deep dive on church leadership, one thing that really sticks with me is Dr. Yarbrough's point about churches rarely rising above the level of their leaders. It's a powerful statement, isn't it?
It is. It really makes you think about the kind of people we're choosing to lead our churches.
Right, and it makes you think about what it means to be a good leader in the first place.
Exactly. And I think Dr. Yarbrough gives us a really helpful framework for that with all these qualities he lays out in 1 Timothy 3.
He does. And it's not just a checklist. It's a description of a life that's been transformed by the gospel.
Absolutely. It's about character more than anything else.
So what are some of the key takeaways that you hope listeners will walk away with from this conversation?
Well, I'd say one of the biggest ones is that leadership isn't about holding a position or having a title. It's about cultivating character.
It's about who you are, not what you do.
Exactly. And it's about reflecting the heart of Christ in everything we do, both inside and outside the church.
And that's something we can all aspire to, whether we're leading a small group or running a Fortune 500 company.
Right. Leadership is about influence. And we all have influence in different spheres of life.
So how can we practically cultivate those qualities of Christ-like leadership in our own lives?
Well, I think it starts with humility, recognizing that we don't have all the answers and that we need God's grace to lead well.
And it involves being intentional about developing our character through spiritual disciplines like prayer, Bible study, and accountability.
Right. And it also means being willing to serve others, putting their needs before our own.
That's the heart of servant leadership, isn't it?
It is. Yep. And it's something that Jesus modeled for us perfectly.
He did. And I think Dr. Yarbrough's point about pastors needing to work themselves out of a job by developing new leaders really highlights that.
It does. It's a radical concept, but it's so important. It's about empowering others to lead and then cheering them on as they surpass us.
It's about leaving a legacy of faith and leadership that extends far beyond our own lifetimes.
And that's something worth striving for, isn't it?
It is. And I think it's a fitting way to wrap up our deep dive on 1 Timothy 3.
I agree. We've covered a lot of ground, but there's always more to learn and explore.
So as we go, let's keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep diving deeper into the riches of God's Word.
And let's keep praying for and supporting the leaders in our churches.
They need our encouragement and our prayers more than ever.
They do.
Yeah.
And let's never forget that the ultimate source of our leadership is Christ Himself.
It's His power that works in us and through us to accomplish His purposes.
So let's fix our eyes on Him and follow His lead.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back soon with a fresh perspective on a new topic. Until then, grace and peace to you all.